Welcome to an Audio Nowcast special, sponsored by API, where we do things just a little bit different from our normal podcast. And no, this is not show 100. Here's your host, Mike Rodriguez.
Hey, welcome to Audio Nowcast. My name is Mike Rodriguez, and before we get going, let me introduce the guys. Over here, on my left, we have Rob Arbiter.
Hello, Mike. Ooh, now, I got to be introduced first tonight.
That's right. It's a very special podcast.
Wow, so. Must be.
Next in, we have Thomas Vent.
Hello, Mike.
See, Thomas in his voice, the golden voice. I'm the best dressed guy at NAMM every year.
That's true.
And next to him, we're honored to have Tony Baker from In The Mix.
How you doing, Mike? Thanks for having me.
And next to him, we've got the one and only Forrest Robinson.
Hi there. Mike.
And next to Forrest, we've got Diego Stuco.
Are you kidding me? You got the same disease that Patrick has. You cannot pronounce my name.
I think Patrick pronounced it last week. I'm copying him.
Well, you know, during the CS presentation, the president of DTS has Diego Rocco. Nice. But anyway, hi, Mike.
And next to Diego, we've got Scott Gershon.
Hey, Mike.
And finally, last but not least, we have Bobby Osinski.
Happy NAMM, Mike.
Happy NAMM! That's awesome. All right. Well, first of all, one big announcement. This is not Podcast 100.
Ooh.
No, this is podcast number one of our roundtable series, and I figured we
might as well. So it's 99.0118? CS.
No, we're going to call this podcast 99.5. And all the 0.5 shows are going to be specials that we're going to do. And this one we're going to do just on NAMM and all the post-NAMM, but we have specials coming up where we're going to be doing just all VO people, just all producers, just all mixers, just all, you know, any specials. It's just going to be a place where we'll be able to do things that are a little different and experiment and not hurt our regular podcast.
Very cool.
So
nice.
This is not podcast 100, but if you were to count how many podcasts we have done and Rob has been here in a row, it might seem like podcast
100. It would feel a lot like that, actually.
But this is not podcast 100. But so let's just say.
So how many hours have we actually been talking? That's really the question.
Oh man, I should.
Since 100, since when? It's about 150 hours.
Yeah, like a week. And how many of that was coherent?
It's a marathon.
We got 15 minutes of good stuff in there. But let's just dig into it. NAMM 2011. It was, it was a little different show. I felt there was a little sense of optimism in the show. It didn't seem as dreary as the last show. Really quick, guys, just what did you think about the overall NAMM? We'll get into specifics later.
Saturday was like
it was a zoo.
It was a zoo. It was crazy. You could barely walk around.
It was wicked.
And there were a lot of celebrity artists, more than I've ever seen at any. See, every booth seemed to have. 100 people surrounded by some celebrity that was doing, you know, I saw Steve Vai, everybody had the drummers, the guitar players, the bass players, right. You know, people in costume.
Oh, yeah.
Rob, yeah, they had the costume thing going, definitely. I saw the Kiss.
Oh, yeah.
Rob, what'd you think overall? What was your, just the vibe?
I thought, well, I only got to the show 2 days this year.
Right.
And I had a very different experience both days, because Saturday was the day I led Stevie Wonder around the show.
Yeah, that's your
annual
parade.
I got to see the bizarre celebrity overkill thing from the other side, and it's just overwhelming and insane every year. But this year, they upped the overwhelmingness and the insanity. It was crazy. I mean, there were dozens of people who followed him everywhere he went, right. But there were thousands of people who he encountered. And, I mean, it's amazing. Everybody must bring a camera to NAMM. Yeah. There were thousands and thousands of bulbs going off. But
you guys had a parade, literally.
It was kind of a parade.
When you walked by the API booth, it was like all we needed was some Sousa playing, and it would be a parade. I couldn't believe how many people were just walking. And you know what? I can understand the person who was like, maybe the next row back behind you, because there's Stevie, and they're walking close to Stevie. Mm-hmm. And maybe even the second row, there's Stevie, and we're walking kind of close. But I don't get the guys that are walking like 10 rows back.
You know what? I know I do get those guys now, because I understand it. I've seen it enough times. What happens is, because they know that he's going to stop and check some equipment out. They know he's going to stop, and there's probably going to be a booth where they can gather around. And a lot of times, if it's a booth with a keyboard and a mic set up, they get an impromptu concert. I mean, right. He'll sit down and start playing and singing, and he's always on his A game. I mean, when he sits down, right. If he decides he's going to play and sing, you really are witnessing something pretty pretty cool.
That's true.
And so he did that in a few different booths, and people just realize, they realize he's not just going to keep walking around. At some point, he's going to stop. And they're yelling things at him, and sometimes he responds, and, you know, he strikes up a conversation with people. You know, he has a pretty good sense of what's going on around him, even though he's not seeing it.
Right.
But from the sound of it, he can tell, you know, if the energy is good and if people have, if they're being really positive in anything. He enjoys hanging out in that. I mean, who wouldn't? Who wouldn't enjoy running around, you know, having thousands of people tell you how much they love you?
Right.
No,
right.
Sure.
And it's true love. I mean, because his music is amazing.
Yeah, I mean, so people are, like, and every year there are people who come up to him and say, thank you for saving my life.
Yeah.
Thank you for making me want to become a musician.
Right.
Yeah. And they're not kidding.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
I mean, these people are in tears.
Thank you for employing me for 4 years.
Well, I said that 21 years ago.
I would say that.
Oh, you would say that, yeah. Of course, exactly. He's still sitting in the studio somewhere waiting for him to come back.
You know, the people who follow him around or the other celebrities there, they're basically hoping for that moment when the celebrity stops and does their thing. Because let's face it, if you're following a great guitar player around, if they happen into the, you know, your favorite guitar booth, and they pick up the instrument, you are getting to see something that you would have paid cash for. You know, you'd go to a concert. Yeah. And that's a pretty unique experience, and I think that's what keeps the people circulating around the floor. Because I saw crowds following other people around too.
Yeah,
it just seemed to be a lot of celebrities, a lot of just, you know.
I saw Sinbad.
He was there. Right, you saw Earth, Wind, and Fire, folks. You know,
Sinbad. A lot of Sinbad. White was present.
Yeah,
he was very present.
But in answer to your question, the mood. I mean, that Saturday it seemed incredibly crowded to me because I was dealing with crowds.
Right,
but. Even Sunday, the mood seemed much more upbeat than last year.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
There were a lot more people than normally on a Sunday. I mean, and everybody seemed to be doing business on Sunday, which a lot of years, Sunday is the year that all the vendors or all the manufacturers go to each other's booths to see the demos, and then everybody packs up early. But it wasn't like that.
That's definitely the day that everybody does business is on Sunday. That's when we did all our business.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Bobby, what do you think the mood was?
I agree about the mood. It was very positive. It was upbeat. And if it's a reflection on the economy, we're coming out of the recession because everybody seemed like they were in a buying mood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I didn't hear any of the gloom and doom that I've heard in other shows.
Right.
Last year, for instance, it wasn't gloom and doom so much as we accept what's happening and we might as well just roll with it. This year, there was none of that. It was, wow, everything is cool and it's upbeat and it looks like we're actually going to be back to normal pretty soon. So that's
of course, what I thought. The average price of products at this show was probably, you know, half of what it was a few years ago. But that's one of the reasons that people are buying again, because there's so many incredibly affordable things to buy at a NAMM show now.
Hmm. Thomas, what do you think from a PR point of view?
Well, I know some companies from Germany who have been thinking twice about coming to NAMM, and this year has been a very positive experience for me as well, because during the last years it became not necessarily boring but slower, and people were not so enthusiastic anymore. But this year was completely different, and I was amazed. I didn't expect it like this, because I was a little bit biased anyways, because I was with a completely new, brand new technology, which I was totally excited about, but I didn't know how the reaction would be. But the overall mood on the show and the crowds in the aisles, that was just amazing. It was like in the old days. Yeah,
that was great. Yeah, Diego, what about you? Did you?
Went there for Sunday because I wasn't demoing this year, and I had the same feeling. It was very. Awesome. It wasn't that slow dead that you usually see on Sunday, and I had a chance to see some products around. The vibe from the demonstrator was good, so I had a good feeling. It wasn't particularly crowded, but not even, you know, like a desert.
Great. Or same thing, optimistic, positive?
Oh, yeah. It felt like I got a great sense that everyone was so freaking glad that 2010 was over with, and myself included. And last year I had only gone on Sunday because I was actually on tour.
Right.
But it did have like this, it was like a dark cloud. It wasn't so much boring as much as it was just sad last year on Sunday. And for me, It was really good because I switched to a new cymbal company. My last cymbal company, I never wanted to leave, but this cymbal company was, they're, you know, they're all ready to showcase even the rock and metal side of me as well as the composition side. So it was a good hang. And after NAMM, all the musicians and the vendors all hang out.
Right.
And the vibe was spectacular.
That's cool.
It was a great hang.
Tony, from a vendor, from an exhibitor, how was NAMM for you?
Oh, real positive, man. We had a great time. It's always good because we have a lot of cool people come through the booth, and it's a little hard explaining the same thing over and over every time when you're in there, but like we didn't have like we were talking about before, we didn't have anybody actually come up this year that asked dumb questions. You know, everybody was really cool. They're like, oh, and they were really excited because we actually have Pro Tools running on a tablet, and like there's nothing else like that out there. So I was there just making cool tracks and showing people how to run it. So we had a great time.
Just so you guys know, in the mix where Tony's from, they do small specialty laptops and tablet computers and OSs on a stick and really cool, neat little different music software and
niche products.
Yeah, so we'll talk about that a little bit later, but that way people know what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's great. Well, let's dig into some of the products. I mean, let's talk right now. Let's start off with the highs. What were some of the products that you guys saw that you liked and that really surprised you? And we'll start with you, Bobby.
I saw three products that I thought were significant, which is three more than I've seen in probably the last 10 NAMM shows. The first one was Gen 16, which is Zildjian's entrance into sampled cymbals. Actually, modeled, not sampled. And they were spectacular. They felt like a real cymbal. You could do everything that you could with a real cymbal, only it was a modeled sound. And considering that you have a 400-year-old company like Zildjian that's, you know, very stodgy and classic and old school, to come out with something like this, I thought that it was very significant and pretty neat. The other thing was kind of a small thing, but it was super for the studio. Peterson, the people that make the strobe tuners, came out with a tactile click track. And basically what it is you clip it onto your belt, your clothing, whatever, and it thumps along with the beat. And you can also, there's a headphone that comes out, so if you want to hear a click as well, you can. But the neat thing was it connected to as many other ones as you wanted by Wi-Fi.
Oh, nice.
What? So this way, if you have a lot of echo in the room or something and the timing's a little bit off, you can just...
You
have someone whacking you in the back of the head.
Yeah, there you go. So I thought that was really neat, especially for players that hate the click or producers that hate the click and can't play to it. I think that's pretty neat. The third thing was by Sonex, the Oxford plugin people, and that was a Sonex Fraunhofer mastering tool for MP3 encoding. And what you could do is you could take five different encoders and compare what they sound like and compare it to the original. And also, you could actually go in and tweak them as well. One of the problems with encoders, MP3 encoders, is they sometimes output hot, which is why it sounds a little crunchy and dirty. But with this, you could actually see it, and you can go in and you can tweak it and whatever. And I thought it was really cool, and it was something. And it's only $500 as well. So I thought that's something that's going to help everybody that does a lot of online audio.
So is it a freestanding application or a plug-in?
Plug-in.
Wow.
Yeah.
Rob, what about you? What? Anything?
Well, let me think. I mean, a lot of what I was looking at the show was software related and, you know, fixes for issues that we've had for a while. And it's nice to see version X plus one of whatever you've been using version X of. Right. And there was a lot of that. As far as hardware, actually, there were two things I saw in the keyboard realm that were pretty cool. There's a company called Infinite Response that has a keyboard called the VAX 77.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a 77-note keyboard, just a MIDI controller, with a really good feel. I mean, the action is really nice. It's all custom-made in America. It's not based on anyone else's keyboard. But the thing that's unique about this keyboard is you push a button or unscrew a thing on the bottom. I forget what it was, but it folds in half.
What? And it goes into a suitcase that you could easily check on an airplane or throw in the car or whatever.
Oh, that's crazy.
Oh, right. Portability.
So guess who got excited about that?
I know.
I can't say.
Mick.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
You have to carry the
Anyone who carries around heavy keyboards all the time. But it's actually a really nice feeling keyboard. And it's sort of just a bonus that it's also completely portable. I think it weighs 34 pounds.
Wow.
And you know what? I'll also say Casio had some really interesting
Casio
keyboards. Yeah, there's a guy there now.
Casio? They're coming up.
Check it out. They had an
Return of the Fuzzy One, huh?
No. They have an 88-key keyboard that feels pretty good that weighs 24 pounds.
Wow.
Not the Privia.
I forget the names.
Okay. Privia actually feels pretty good.
Their stuff, they're coming up. I mean, they actually have some interesting stuff. And the other thing, though, the new generation of 88-key Rhodes was just amazing feeling. Yeah. That thing is a work of art.
Wow.
I wouldn't want to carry that around. It weighs a ton, but it's really cool. So that's what I was looking at.
Diego, what about you? What did you see?
Well, actually, in the same line of, you know, the portability concept, I went to the Keith McMillan booth, and I saw the SoftStack pedalboard, which is the lightest pedalboard I've seen. Because, you know, with live, I love to have control recording the clips and stuff. And they showed me this thing. It's this thing, very light, has a 9, 10 button steps, but the cool thing is that they move X, Y, they sense pressure. It's basically the same thing. It's on and off, pressure, left and right, up and down.
What?
Wow. And it's completely mappable, so you can map it to... I was already thinking, okay, I'm using this with Omnisphere.
So you can modulate off the buttons.
Yeah, everything.
As well.
So you're playing with both your hands and with your feet. And here's the cool thing. You can use two buttons at the same time, or three or four, because you can move your feet around.
Oh, man.
And you can have all these things moving around, and it's very cool, and it's... I mean, I was using the when I recorded with Patrick, I was using the Roland, the organ pedalboard, which is huge. And I was thinking, how can I bring this with me? Because now you have all the micro, nano controls, Korg, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
But yet, there wasn't a pedalboard. So this one was a major thing for me. And then from the same company, I also saw nice sound design modeling software for guitars or any other string instrument that basically allows you to do some radical sound design both on the acoustic sound and on the MIDI, because you can connect the MIDI pickup and pick up both signals at the same time.
Hmm.
So these are things that
I
got excited about. Yeah. Hmm.
Scott, what about you?
Hello.
I missed this one.
It was a long time. You know, I saw two things that were kind of like version 2. And one of them came out just right before now, working well, and that is the Artist Series Euphonics controllers with Yukon. Mm. And I picked actually two of them up right before NAMM, but you really couldn't get them until around NAMM. And I was never a big fan of the Euphonics Artist Series previously when it was running Huey protocol. And now looking at the power of these little mixers with Yukon is pretty much blown my mind, because you basically, for $900 to $1,000, got two of them, almost have the same capabilities as my D command.
Hmm.
Because what happens you've got a touchscreen panner. You've got knobs that are not nudge but touch. So it blows the doors off of Control 24, blows it off of C24. It's not as much a hardcore mixing surface as much as it is really what Pro Tools is, and that is faders. You can do plugins. You can automate them. They got 8 touch faders on the command section and then the mix section. It was very intuitive. You've got one thing I love on the D command D control is that you can call up a focus track where you say, let me see track 63, and you create, in Harrison's word, called a fat channel, where you've got all of your plugins. You can do that on this device.
Hmm.
So you can do, not everything, but you can do a lot of really cool things for $2,000 that you've never been able to do. And from the sound design, or even, and the footprint's really small. So I was very, very impressed with that. I think, I know we talked about UAD on our last show or the show before.
Right.
It's nice to now see that they've got a FireWire interface.
Right.
So for us Pro Tools users that are using HD3s without an expansion chassis, we've been SOL. Mm-hmm. Now, they're also talking about coming out with RTAS. So now all of these great plugins that were available with UAD, you can now access. And I think that that is really great, as well as Pro Tools now being open to all of the I.O. And right. and hearing the buzz about everybody who wants to create something for it.
Well, you know, on that line, we saw the new Benchmark. They have a new 16-channel converter that can be used as an audio interface. And that's 16 channels of Benchmark with their clock, and it's going to retail for about $4,000, you know, somewhere around there.
Wow. Yeah.
That's like, that's that makes Pro Tools, that whole, you know, Pro Tools opening up. You just see vendors
is
like
that. Is that I.O.? Is it in and out? Well, it must be in if you can use it as an interface.
Yeah, you can use it as, well, it must be out as you can use it as an interface. I don't know. I just briefly buzzed through. I was actually with my friend Mike Stitz, who, you know, was on the podcast, and he uses Benchmark a lot, and he was just gushing all over that thing and talking about it. And
I think that at AES and definitely the next NAMM show, everyone's going to be coming out with a Pro Tools accessory. Mm-hmm. It's just
going to line up
because it is very, very popular. Why not?
Why not?
And now that they're going much more open feel, you know, whether it's I.O. And other things, I think that it's you know.
I think it helps everybody, not just Pro Tools, but it helps Motu, it helps, you know, Cubase, anybody, you know, that's going to start making more interfaces. It's only going to be a good thing for the whole industry.
And you know what, also I saw that the last thing, I think, which you couldn't not see, the guitar player in me.
Yeah.
I think there's 2,000 pedals out there. I mean, you know, I think what was interesting was the, you know, it used to be that you had AES and then you had NAMM, and then NAMM started turning into a mini AES, and you had a lot of pro audio companies there. And what's interesting, all of the pro audio companies, TC, Eventide, they're all coming out with guitar pedals. And they're all kind of using their technologies to be accessible, and they're kind of inexpensive. I mean, it's and there's so many colors and sounds and
it's kind of hard to navigate through those options.
But it was great. It was great to see that a lot of creativity, especially in the pedal world, in the guitar world, in the amp modeling, it was just massive.
That's great. Thomas, what about you? Did you see anything? I know you were with Kemper Amps, and we'll talk about that in a little bit, but what about just the musician side of it?
To be honest, I didn't have much time because for the first time at NAMM, I did the presentations also for the new product of my client, this Kemper profiling amplifier, and I had barely time to walk around. I was just running around quickly on Saturday and saw some of the new Marshall artists amplifiers models, saw some funny pedals, and some iPad applications, which wondered.
Yeah, there were a lot of
what
those.
What is that iPads, for?
Yeah, we're going to talk about that in a second.
And the most impressive was the iBone, just by the name. I thought, who came up with that name?
Everybody was taking pictures of their signs. It's called the iBone. It's a trombone app.
It's a trombone app for the iPad.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and
it's called
iBone. We're losing control.
Oh my gosh.
So, to be honest, for me, that's about it, as I was basically locked to my booth.
You know, now that you mentioned the profile amplifier, I saw the video of it, and it's funny that you remember, because I was intrigued by it. Basically, detects the sound from any amplifier, and it's convolution doing magic, something like that, I guess. It's more complex than that, of course.
But
it's a very interesting machine.
It's pretty awesome, and we'll get Thomas to go into that in just a little bit. But yeah, that was.
I like the fact that when he's doing the calculation, he makes this these noises. It's like the machine is alive.
Tony, did you get a chance to walk around and see anything?
I got a little bit of time to walk around and stuff. It was kind of in the same vicinity that I was in, but. Yeah, I saw some cool stuff. The guys next to us, the Stokio booth, they make cool accessories and DJ stuff and everything. They had this little MIDI controller called the MIDI Fighter, and it had actual little old arcade buttons on it, you know, like when you're punching and stuff like that. So there was like 16 of those buttons. Just the look of it and the feel of it was actually pretty cool. I thought that was just a cool little,
what does it do?
Cool little controller. It's a MIDI controller.
Oh, it's a MIDI controller.
Yeah, just a MIDI controller. Nothing like spectacular or anything like that. Right. Just look cool and made you look cool having it, you know, type of deal.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. I'll tell you what, there was a couple products that I went and saw that really kind of stood out for me. For one thing, it seems like every year microphones are getting less expensive and sounding better.
Yeah. Yes.
And I scored this year at NAMM once again. I buy Chinese microphones all the time. And
yeah, I was going to say, the Chinese have improved their technology.
Yeah. No.
Well, they've improved their technology in how to get Mike to buy microphones. That's basically what they've been working
on. Listen, and every year I buy a couple little mics because, you know, they're not that expensive. Mm-hmm. When you can talk them down. And I bought a mini.
You can talk them down.
You can.
No, you know what's funny? I saw him with the microphone in his hand right after he bought it.
I've already done a session with one of my mics that I got. I got this this bottle style of microphone, and it has unbelievable clarity. I brought it, and if you guys want to check it out afterwards, it's really clear. It's really smooth. You don't hear any bump in the frequency, and I used it already on a network project that I did, and it was perfect. I mean, the vocals I did basically, I had to record six guys, and we had to multiply it so it sounds like a giant manly choir. And it was perfect. I had them get around it, put an Omni, and they all sang, and it cut through the music, and it was like, I was impressed. It was really good. But the microphones, not just them, but like Sennheiser had a really great microphone, the MK4. And I went and I listened to it, and I actually posted a little bit something on the Facebook page if you guys followed what we were doing on Facebook. And it was actually one of the listeners that was a suggestion of theirs to check out the microphone, so I went and checked it out. And I was really amazed. It's going to street for like $300. And it sounds great. They had a M147, a TLM-102, and a TLM-103 all together. And that whole lineup, the TLM-102 actually sounded the best, but the MK4 was just right behind it. It has a nice little edge. It cuts. It would be great for vocals and just clear. The 102 was a little smoother, had a little more bass, but you know, it's the Neumanns are, you know, they're warm mics anyhow. Right. And so it was just amazing to see that mic. The other one is Cascade has this mic coming out that, they don't sell anything over $1,000. It's not going to be over $1,000. It's going to be under. We were talking to the guy and it was set up. It's a large diaphragm, condenser microphone that just sounded great. It just had the bottom, but it had cut. It wasn't shrilly, but it was clear. You know, sometimes you get some of the cheap microphones that have a high end, but it's really kind of shrilly. And this had some great clarity. So that was really good. The other thing I saw was, probably what's going to be the most overused plugin from now to eternity. Stutter Edit. From Isotope. It's a great plugin. Don't get me wrong. I love the plugin. I have the plugin, and it's great. But you just see, it's going to be misused so much. And it's really cool. It allows you to do stutter edits in time, at real time. It'll sync up to, you know, whatever your DAW is. So whatever the tempo is, you hit it. Does some fantastic things, but you're going to hear that. It's the new autotune. You're going
to
hear
it
all over the place. So
that's why we're so happy. We're here.
If you got it, or if you haven't got it and use it first. Wait, if you haven't got it,
get it. Whoever uses first is brilliant.
That's right. Right.
And afterwards, it's like,
But that was really cool. And the other thing, too, was the Korg, the Key Oscillator Quad. I don't know if you guys
saw
that. That was really cool. Yeah. It was really good tools for manipulating audio and things like that. One thing I did notice, and I don't know if you guys noticed this trend, but if you look in electronic music, there's this trend of going back to like old analog circuit bent type of sounding stuff. You know, there was a ton of beat machines that were just analog that were just annoying as heck.
did you see down in the basement in Hall E, there was a group of nine manufacturers that were all doing modules, like 2600 modules and stuff like that, with patch cords and everything.
Yeah.
But what the interesting part was they came up with a common backplane, so like a lunchbox, they can slam these things in and out, like, you know. But I thought it was fascinating. And there was a lot of buzz, a lot of great feeling around it. You know, it's probably a very little community, but nonetheless, it was exciting.
Yeah. No, it was always crowded, and you're right. There was a definite excitement about it. But sometimes, you know, if you listen to it, it sounds okay. It's that whole circuit bent. You know, they have you know, homebrew music and things like that. They have, you know, all those festivals and things like that, and they sound for that they sound fine. But it just, you know, I can only hear so many LFOs, you know, going up and down, you know, and so that was one thing I noticed was that trend. And even things like Tempest, the Tempest drum machine, Dave Smith and Roger Lynn, that looks really cool. It's coming out. It's going to be like $2,000. But even those sounds are, you know, it's that whole analog thing. And it's,
you can feel it hit you in the chest, though. Yeah. I noticed that thing sounded great.
The good thing about that one, is that one has at least some beef out of it. I mean, it definitely has some.
It's funny because I was, you know, saying hi to Rob Papin.
Yeah.
And he's introducing a new software drum machine called. No, what is the name?
I heard that too.
He always has weird
really
names
good.
For his stuff. Like
but
Terminator.
It sounded great because you know Rob knows how to do very good sounding analog stuff, and his new plugin sounds great. And he showed me a little bit, so I was just thinking, $2,000 for a drum machine, it's not that bad if you are in the 80s.
But it is interesting how we've gone in a circle and circles.
That's exactly
the origin, and you know,
this is electronic music, 1972. You know,
not saying anything bad. It's just the actual truth. I am sure they have a following for that specific machines. But
I'll tell you what. Oh, go ahead.
Everything's a throwback now. You know, everybody wants to bring back the old stuff to the new. So like, there is a market for that. I mean, I don't know how many people are going to buy a $2,000 drum machine when you can actually get it in the software type of deal.
Well, what I saw, and this is kind of almost, I don't know, is it a trend that kind of annoyed me, is everybody's going back to that analog sound. You hear that,
right?
And everybody's doing that. And the most ridiculous thing was,
do that again.
I went to the BT concert that Isotope had, and BT was really good, the opening act was just, he's known for his overly processed samples and stuff, and it was just ridiculous because the PA was way too loud. It was seriously, it was ruining people's ears. People were walking in and walking out. I don't know if they knew how dangerous it was, but it was just really high, you know, high level. And I had earplugs on, and I had to put a second set in because it was seriously.
That's a whole new show.
Let's talk about that.
No, what you do is you get two of them and you put them together. You mash them together. You don't put one on top of the other.
Wow!
And you were like,
"Are they going to you shoving two in there?" Like, how'd you get the first pair out?
but it was so. I mean, it was so loud. It was dangerous loud. I mean, it really was, and it was a little unnecessary. But it just wasn't. It wasn't musical, and it was just annoying. And then you walk the floor, and you hear some of this. And I'm a huge, you know me. I'm a huge electronic music guy. I love all the different genres, but some of the stuff that it's just, you know, it takes a lot of the music out. A lot of it is geared towards the processing and how can I process the sample, and let me do the weirdest process. Let me do the fastest stutter at it. Let me do this. And it's just, the music just kind of goes by the wayside.
Oh, yeah.
And it just reminded me of like if you watch TV in the 80s and they did like a flash forward episode of Music in the Future, and it sounded all kind of ridiculous. And you know what? We're there. that's what music
is. We're back
is.
To the Foxtrot.
So
that 70s show.
And I just, you know what? And I feel like the keyboard manufacturers are, you know, they're running out of, like, there's no new sounds, you know? Really. There's no, I mean, there's some cool modulations, and I'll tell you, I think something that I really liked was Omnisphere 1.5.
The Orb.
Yeah, that's cool. And that's like the, like, at least they're going that direction.
Now, you know how things. That thing works exactly? Because, you know, I work with Spectrosonic, so I don't want to, but the cool thing about it is that every time you open a patch, you open the Orb, and it immediately generates a new patching.
Oh, that's cool.
It's not preset.
Right.
So you can change it in real time. You roll the dice, and it changes the assignments of these modulations. That's why it's really, really cool.
Yeah. So, I mean, that was pretty exciting. But as far as sounds go, there's nothing. It's like everybody's kind of looking. They don't hear anything new. Well, let's go back and let's do this. And, I mean, granular synthesis was just alive and overused. You know, it's all over the place. And I love that, but it's just gone. And you look at the Chord Kronos, right? Chord Kronos was big, 9-synth engine. It sounds great. You know, it's really beefy. Jordan Rudess did a great, great demo of the whole thing, but it's not, you know.
I read a comment about that because I was thinking, you know, regarding the price and right. the kind of. It looks like the M1, by the way, to me.
Yeah.
It has a very. They say, I mean, I read this comment saying probably their biggest client are going to be churches and places like that because users, I mean, people that do electronic music, why would they buy a keyboard like that?
Right. And it's not even. And they stopped making, like, the last keyboard I really liked at Korg that I thought was cutting edge. Was Oasis. Rob has an Oasis. Mm-hmm. And that's cool. I mean, the pads and things like that.
Well, when you play the Oasis, you feel like you're, you know, like flying the space shuttle or something.
Yeah.
And the new one, the Kronos, I mean, the sounds were fine.
Yeah.
But it just looks like yet another keyboard. Guys, it's not nearly as exciting.
Been there, although it has 9 synth engines. Bobby, were you going to say so?
Well, speaking of keyboards, and being an ex-Hammond player, the one thing I noticed was there was a lot of Hammond knockoffs, so to speak, Hammond simulations. And there's been that for a while. But the one thing that everyone has seemed to finally have conquered is the Leslie.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I couldn't believe it. Every keyboard I went to that was a Hammond simulator had this great Leslie that just not had it.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was kind of neat because,
that was cool.
You know, and again, being a former Hammond owner and player, you know those things. You're right on it. Right. If it doesn't sound good, it's
right.
Like, oh, man. But, man, this was great this time.
Hmm.
And it was like 5 different companies. Everybody had it.
Oh, yeah. So, so keyboards, I think they're looking. There's something that's going to happen there. It wasn't at this NAMM.
Yeah, they're all going to go out of business. That's what's going to happen.
Yeah, a lot of. Oh, I'll tell you what, man. Speaking of going out of business, like Roland, man, you can just slowly see them doing a slow die. It's not a quick.
Because I see Korg releasing a lot of these tiny products, and they are selling a lot.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, the Korg knows what's up.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Like,
but Roland, the
funny
thing about Roland. Here's a good. This will sum up Roland in a nutshell. Their modeled accordion that they set up, and the guy does a demo, and what is he playing out of it? An accordion sound. And it's this electronic accordion.
Wow.
He's playing an accordion sound. Right. It's like, man, that is missing the boat.
It seems like they've gotten a lot more family-esque style instruments. Uh-huh. Before, they used to lead the charge with the coolest sound.
Oh, yeah, with the, what is the name of the
sounds, but,
yeah.
You know.
The Lucina, did they do the... What's the name of that white keyboard?
Well, did you see that? They did the
keytar.
Did you see the choir? The choir box?
No.
What it does
is... Oh, yeah. Actually, I did. I heard
the guy
demo.
Sings into it. Does, you don't have to sing into it. You just have to mouth whatever you want. And you play it in. And he did a very impressive Bohemian Rhapsody and choir stuff that I thought...
Right.
Certain people, I mean, for a record, I don't know if it would work. But boy, doing live and you want a choir. And,
right.
And you can have them sing whatever words you want. And it was, and the guy really knew how to use it. And it was, you know, it was kind of cool. It was a little module.
From Roland?
Yeah.
Huh. I'll tell you where else they shine, and I've played all of these, and maybe you did too, Forrest, but of all the electronic drums that are out there, I think you can't beat Roland's sound.
Yeah,
you
the
can't.
Yeah.
Even the pad, the mesh pads are awesome.
Yeah.
I went to Pearl, and I saw the Pearl kit, and mm-hmm. and the kit's cool. The pads are gummy as you I believe, and the sounds. I don't know if it was a bad patch or what, but they were they're thin,
yeah,
aren't they?
Yeah, they are
thin.
It's not
like
much body at all.
Paper thin, and I'm like, right? You know what your money's going into? It's going into the pads because the sounds just didn't have the sounds. But Roland, man, their drums are just phenomenal.
They're steel at the time.
I might be wrong, but I think Eric was behind those sounds.
In Roland?
Yes.
Because
he was the chief sound engineer, sound designer for Roland for many, many years. So many of the things that...
I have to say something. When I was on tour with Utada in 06, we went to Matsuyama, to the actual place where the drums, like the pianos, everything were recorded. It was like a Tama an old, like, 80s Tama superstar kid or something.
Right, right.
And that room, I've never seen the bats of insulation. Like, and they weren't like, you know, how do you, you know how they're placed on the walls, just right. flat? They were all, mm-hmm. like, vertically, yeah. like, pressed together. And, I mean, it was so tight in there that you're... the tinnitus in your ears were driving
me nuts.
Oh,
I know. Yeah.
Wow.
And, right. And you, there was a wire net, literally a wire net that just was just suspended across the room. They would set a grand piano on there. They would set a drum, a kit wow. on there.
Wow.
And that's how they get their sounds.
Yeah.
The
sound.
It's anechoic, yeah.
Oh gosh. Yeah. That, but it definitely was. I just know.
Yeah.
When you start hearing your breathing and your heartbeat.
Man, it was yeah. bad. So it was, man.
Yeah, so it's, I mean, Roland, they're still doing the drum thing really well. The controls are really good, but boy, it was kind of sad from where they were.
It's a third of what they used to look
like. Yeah.
I mean, see the Korg new
they can
mini piano.
Yeah, the mini piano. It looks like a little grand piano, yeah, but it's mini
like,
keys.
It's beautiful. It's like
Snoopy. It sounds good,
to be honest, though, the saddest thing I think
it's
I've
for
seen.
For a little kid?
And I love them. But it's kind of the Lamborghini of audio that's gotten in the back in the NS Lexicon.
Ah.
Mm.
I mean, I go there and I'm going, oh, come on. I mean, that's Lexicon was the Lamborghini of reverbs.
Right, you're right.
And you know what? It still is. You listen to these wonderful musical reverbs,
yeah.
And I've got Altiverb, I got all the plug-in reverbs, I got reverbs for days, and you put the Lexicon on, and it just has a sound.
The plug-in is awesome.
Yeah, the plug-in
it's
is
awesome.
Great.
Yep. You know what? Where were they? I don't even remember
seeing
them.
You know what? They've got a table. If you go to Harman and you look and you... Please wait. If you lean forward and you blink, you've missed their table. And it's literally, they just have a handful of stuff and none of the pro audio stuff and none of the, you know... I didn't even know if I saw a 96 or a 92. I mean, it was...
Yeah.
It was just a bunch... It was almost ancillary.
Yeah.
Well, which will lead into my next thing. Let's talk about NAMM Show misses. We talked a little bit about the hits, but what are some of the misses that you saw? I mean, I
got a big one.
All right, start.
For all the guitar players out there, Gibson reintroduced their Firebird. They call it a Firebird X. And this was the most complicated guitar known to man. It had so many knobs and switches on it. It had a built-in modeler, but it was so complicated. I played with it for 15 minutes and couldn't get more than one sound out of it. One stupid,
wow.
distorted sound.
Wow.
It was just so complicated that finally I gave up.
Yeah. At the press conference on YouTube, it's a must also.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you should see the video. It was introduced in November, late November, and the entire press conference, it was from the Hard Rock Cafe in New York, is on YouTube. So everybody interested in that guitar should watch that video.
Firebird X.
Firebird X, yes.
I'm going to check it out tonight.
Yeah. I'm going to check it out
right now.
I checked out the guitar modeler you told me that looks like a 1940s or 50s lunchbox that looks like old audio. It was the most unintuitive piece of audio, that little, I forgot that guitar modeler that you were telling me about. Oh, go over there! There, you know, and I went there and I hit it and I got a guitar sound. I went, yeah, okay, whatever. And I was trying to change patches. And then I said, oh, there's the big knob. Does that do it? No. Okay, is there a button? No. Does that do it? No. So I hit the switches and I couldn't get the thing to move anywhere. And then I just... So screw it.
What about you? What about you, Diego?
I think since I've been there only Sunday, I didn't see anything that I didn't want to see. So luckily, I don't have any bad story. I don't think I've seen anything terrible. I was just, nothing really. I stopped by only to see things that I liked. So what about you, Forrest?
I was there all day, every day. And honestly, same thing. I tried to only go to the places that I knew I wanted to see. I actually started making a checklist. And still, the NAMM show, the beautiful thing about the NAMM show, which is also probably the bad thing about it, is even when you're pinpointing, there are so many things there, you can't, even all day, every day, still not enough.
It's overwhelming.
Yeah.
Yeah, there isn't.
I'll tell you one big miss that, that this is probably not only was it a big miss, it was probably the worst sales pitch I've ever heard of any product, and it came from a really great company. It came from Neumann microphones, and we were in the booth, and I was with my friend Mike, and we're looking around, and we see this microphone that's on the other side of the microphones, and it's their Solution D. It's their digital line of microphones, which are insanely expensive. Yep. It's like $8,000, you know, $10,000 for the microphone. And so we walked up there, and Mike goes, "So what is this?" And says, "It's a digital microphone." "Oh, a digital microphone." And he was saying, the salesman was saying, we go, "Well, what's a digital microphone?" "Oh, it has the built-in analog to digital converter in it." And we go, "Really?" He goes, "Yeah." It goes, "Because, you know, in microphones, you know, in the whole miking process, there are artifacts that are introduced along the line." And I go, "Well, what if you like those artifacts?" Artifacts like great mic pre's, you know? Right. Yeah. And he goes, "Oh, it's because you've never heard a microphone without them." And I go, "But through your analog through digital converter, so it's gonna." And he goes, "Yeah, but you've never heard it." And we went and we tried out the mic, and it didn't sound that great. And I don't know if it was the way it was set up. I don't know if it was
explanation.
It was the headphones or whatever. I mean, I expected seriously to walk up to talk to that mic and fall in love with my voice again. You know, I mean, just like you sexy dog, you. But no, I got in there and it was my same old voice. I couldn't believe
it. Just a little poorer, if you want it.
Yeah,
you know?
I wouldn't recommend it. I don't even know when you would use it. I wouldn't. And by him saying that whole introduce the, you know, artifacts, it's like we're sitting there, so does this totally invalidate all your other analog mics that you have?
History,
you know?
Basically.
It's like the sound of your microphones has been so great for all these years. You know, like, you know, a 149, people would die for it, you know? Right. And it's just, I just didn't get his sales pitch the way he's saying artifacts. You know, it's like, hey, if I want the sound of an API mic pre, okay, fine, it might be an artifact, but it sounds pretty damn good, you know?
You had the wrong guy pitching it to you, that's what happened.
Yeah, it's almost like an engineer just got out for the day. Hey, come on, get out of the lab and come and
Had the wrong guy pitching it to you, probably.
But even regardless,
but
when
it helps when you actually have a good pitch man. Like, he'll hype it up, everything like that. Like, that's the number one thing when it comes down to showing a product.
Absolutely, you know? and the second thing is, but when you actually hear it, I was not impressed with it. The other thing that I noticed, the one thing that was kind of cool is it's great to see all the trend of iPad. I thought that was really cool. Some really great things, you know, like Akai coming out with a keyboard controller and things like that. But then there was this one booth downstairs in Hall E. Hall E, isn't that the best hall?
Yeah. I didn't even get there this year.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it's the best.
There was a controller. It was a guitar controller. It was shaped like a guitar, but instead of strings,
it had that hat.
And it was so. It's like trying to play a pane of glass and make music.
Going back and forth really quick.
It was just so non-expressive.
They were at CES. They were at CES, believe it or not. They had a huge crowd around them.
It's just, you know, I'm a big iPad fan, but that, and I'm not, it wasn't even an iPad, it was probably an
Android like touchpad.
It's called a Kinata, I guess.
But they had purple strings.
It was like
the strings glowed slightly purple.
Yeah. Yeah. That was the most. You could not play that thing. It just wasn't expressive enough, and it just didn't.
You're into electronica. Did you see the Buchla Lightning version 5, whatever?
I saw that.
And you know what? For me, for sound design, I'm always looking at new ways of triggering sounds and unique. Yeah. And it was cool, and I actually said, "Can I play it?" Because you can do all these really weird zones, and I didn't really feel a significant latency on them. Hmm. But the thing is, because if you use your fingers to
Your fulcrum,
so if you're not using your arm to move like a normal drumstick,
yeah.
I did occasionally get some wrong triggers, rarely, but occasionally would happen. But it was kind of a really neat interface.
Why don't you describe what that was really quick?
What it looks like is, it's kind of like a drumstick, but the end of it is light. Ah. So it looks like one of those little kid lightsabers.
Right.
And yet two of them, and one's green and one's red. Hmm. And then there's something that's reading what you can do. And as you move, it's got vertical and horizontal. And you can do notes. You can do MIDI controls of any form.
That's cool.
And it was actually really, really, really interesting.
Well, you know, in the same line, at the same company that I saw the soft, from the same company that does the soft stuff, they have the K-Bow.
Yeah, right.
I want to try that with the Xperibase.
Yeah,
because you can, you know, modulate stuff with this thing. I know you're trying to.
I'm trying to help my brother.
Yeah, that was another thing that, because I like this mix of analog human touch with the technology thing.
And what's up with all the ukuleles still? I don't understand. There was how many ukuleles?
Thousands. Heavy metal ukuleles.
Because of YouTube. I don't know how anybody can even concentrate with ukuleles, guitars. There's so many moves there. People get so confused.
I actually saw a guy playing a ukulele, and at first I went, what's he playing? Because it was actually really cool. He was just noodling on it, but he was like, you just don't expect that coming from a... You know, tiptoe through the tulip ukulele.
I'll tell you something else that was pretty. I only see these at NAMM, and that's like the six.
The girls?
No. This, no, I never see those at NAMM.
But it was the bunk hair. You know, the huge.
It was the fashion show. Yeah.
It was the 16-string basses. You know.
Oh gosh.
16. No. Yes. 16
I didn't see
strings.
That. I didn't see that.
I got pictures of that. It's like. It was amazing.
Is that legal?
Really? Big old fat things.
I think you play with your arm.
No, it's like a 12-string guitar, but with four strings on
each. And what is it like? Go down to the brown note?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I may even have a picture on my iPhone that I could pass around. But yeah, it was. The basses were huge. It was you got to have hands.
So you mean the neck was like ridiculous?
Yeah, it was ridiculous. It was it was a runway if you
had it. Like the 101.
It's like you got your own road here, you know.
No, that's wrong.
But you know what? Those guys that play basses that big, they shred because it's so ridiculous. You have to be good if you're going to play that. You can't go up to that and play Smoke on the Water.
Right. There was a lot of metal. I know metal's still around a little bit, but...
No, it's around a lot, bro.
It's a huge... Mm-hmm. I mean, all of NAMM, guitar-wise, was every guitar had a skull.
Right.
I mean, and it was black and...
Been trying to tell people for the last 20 years, they ain't gone.
And there was more shoe polish in the hair. You know, jet black, and it was just
Rob's
like...
dying.
Okay, how about the guitars that... Did you see the guitar that had the LED screen in it underneath?
Pick,
and it had different... You have different themes and things like that.
Every 5 seconds, it would gradually change.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. And all you can think of is, boy, if this guy ever gets into it and just... cracks that thing. You know? And then, that was way, way...
It makes me think about Ace Frehley and the flaming pickups. His guitar solo. What was that kiss up on? Yeah, Ace Frehley with the flaming pickups.
Anybody see the tat sleeve?
No.
What it is, if you're a wimpy guy and you don't want to go through the pain of getting real tats, there's a sleeve that you put on that's like a nylon.
It's the eye sleeve.
So when you get sleeve, you literally get a sleeve.
It's the new app from Apple.
So you can look cool for the night.
I'm getting a sleeve, man.
Always a sleeve. That's crazy.
That's pretty funny.
There's a lot of crazy stuff at NAMM.
Awesome right there. That's precious. I got to see that.
There was a booth for that guy? They had a booth for the Tashley?
Yeah. Downstairs, of course.
Yeah.
You know, and NAMM is the only place you get an $8 scoop of soft ice cream.
Yeah.
and a $10 water and
$5. $9 sandwich that looks like there's something dead in it. Yeah.
It was $5 for an ice cream cone.
For a while.
$5.
You know what? I do have to... I think I... told the story on another podcast too, but my favorite miss of all time at the NAMM show, and it was down in Hall E.
Was it this year?
No, it wasn't this year. I don't know if they were there this year. And at this point, they probably hate me because I've told the story so many times. But I think I told the story. There was a company that made an adapter that went from an XLR mic cable to a 3-prong electrical outlet. And the idea was, well, the idea was you could then use, like, you know, lawnmower extension cords as mic cords, and basically any long extension cord you had for AC became a mic cable. And you could just picture, though, you know, plugging the mic in one end and plugging it in the wall in the other, and just some singer being, like, blown to the ceiling, basically. But it was a real product, and they had a real booth downstairs.
Oh,
and,
my goodness.
And they were serious, too. They thought this was a huge cost-saving thing.
Oh, my
God. Did they get UL approval, I wonder?
And it, you know what? It looked like a pigtail that you put on the end of a, like, a lawnmower cable, except it came out of three-prong AC into an XLR. I just thought that was awesome. It's like, that is just a disaster waiting to happen. Can you imagine what their insurance must have been?
It's only cost-effective. You have really good health insurance.
Yeah. I mean, that's my favorite miss of all time.
Yeah, because we all know, you know, you buy that microphone for, you know, $1,000, that mic cable is just going to, nope, it's going to be a deal killer. Right?
Exactly. And just the possibility.
Burn up the phantom power.
Exactly. Yeah. Just the possibility of just plugging a mic into an electrical outlet.
You know what I thought was
makes a single scream. Yeah. Falsetto production.
I'll tell you what, I would like to own one of those, not even to use it, just to have it, because it would make me seem like a badass.
You have no idea how much I regret not buying one of those. You know, I just, that would be something to own.
I know.
Actually, we should look up on the web. I wonder if they're still around.
XLR to, I'll look it up.
Oh. XLR to 120.
You're right.
One of the things I was a little dismayed at was the lack of plug-in companies. I mean, you had Waves and Sound Toys and Native Instruments, which sort of, you know, I think so. I saw Oxford. But
Native Instruments wasn't there, was it?
I don't think it was.
No, they weren't.
Yeah. They weren't, no.
There were Native Instruments wasn't there. Sonics.
Native Instruments wasn't there?
No.
No, not even last year.
But, you know, Waves had a 10x10 booth rather than a 20x20. And, and everybody, you can see, that was actually one of the things I was asking them about. And I know Waves has been devastated by somebody cracked their software. And it's been really hurting them that, you know, all these companies are getting cracked software, and it's
they can get the Mercury bundle for free now.
Yeah,
what?
and they can't afford it.
I mean, the new Mercury bundle you can get the crack for free. Apple, Intel, Mac, you know, all that.
Right, so
they're really screwed, and it's really, they are.
And it's difficult because, you know, you look at the Digi website, all of the partners, and, you know, nobody's there. Or if they are there, they're sharing booths.
Yeah.
Like there's a lot of that.
I saw BTX at, you know, they were sharing as one guy.
Yeah.
You know, and everybody's limping along. Soundtoy said they had a really good year, I know.
Right.
But I don't think they've been cracked yet. But yeah, it is sad because, you know, you used to have your rack of really cool outboard gear, and a lot of the things that really define, especially in sound design, what you do is those plugins.
Yeah.
And, you know, it used to be cracks were kind of cool to be able to get evaluation copies because you couldn't get demos and you didn't know if they were good, if they were bad.
Right.
And then once you really liked it, you said, well, this is really good. Let me go buy it. And now it's just not the case. You can get the demos, the cracks are out, and the plugins are only like $200.
Right.
So it's like, come on, you know, I mean.
Except Waves. I mean.
No, Waves can be expensive, but you get a lot. I mean.
No, I totally agree.
You get their bundle, it really steps your game up a lot. Like,
you get Mercury, and also you got an SSL console, a lead console, and API. I mean, it's.
And I can see why they're a target, though, because, you know, the Mercury is so expensive. So
actually, the SSL is not included in Mercury. That's the only thing that isn't.
He's actually selling the plugin bundle.
No, not at all.
You know, on that note about the plugin companies, one thing that I noticed too is that this NAMM show really kind of helps define why AES is still relevant because at this NAMM show you didn't see a lot of the hardware manufacturers that you see at AES and I thought
the Pro Audio component was there.
Yes, but did you hear the rumor that AES may be folded into NAMM?
What?
Yeah.
Mm. When for this year?
No, they didn't say when. They just said that's a possibility.
You know, because it makes sense. In this marketplace,
everybody's consolidating.
It's so expensive for manufacturers to go from show to show to show.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So if they can sit there and have one booth and hit two places at once.
Yeah. No, that's a smart move because AES is ridiculously expensive.
Yeah.
I mean, just the carpet rental alone at AES for like a 10x10 booth is like $1,200 for the show. For the
classes at AES are cool for
4 days of carpet.
Yeah.
They're going to need to do that just to get more traffic into the show anyway, combine the two. That, I think that would be great.
Because NAB audio is dead.
Yeah.
And AES has been like, who's not there? Or who is there? And I didn't, like, did you not show up one year?
It's starting to be like, I mean, unfortunately, the NAB show in some occasions, you know, it looks like that too. You know, I wish they could just get more people in, more people.
That's what I thought this year. Even it was kind of skimpy.
Because you start,
but NAB is private and AES isn't, so that would be an interesting. Unless they AES and NAB are in the same town, and this, you know,
yeah. Yeah, it's going to be an interesting dynamic to figure out, but I think it would definitely be a good move because, boy, last AES, although the vendors that were there were pretty relevant and kicking, but it was tiny. I mean, it's not like the good old days where you would go and you'd see desks for miles and all kinds of cool stuff and new dogs.
Well, it's one all now.
Yeah. Well, hey, listen, guys. Before we, you know, we're going to be wrapping this up pretty quick. I wanted to talk a little bit about speaking about vendors and things like that. I wanted to start off with Tony and tell us just a little bit about your company, Tony, and what you do. Oh, see, okay. For our NAMM show, we brought a vendor.
Very nice.
Well, thank you for having me. What we do is we're a Linux based company. We design the audio OS from the ground up for mobile devices. So we've been doing this for 5 years, and now the hardware is finally catching up, you know, with what we're doing. And we have a whole line of products. We have a couple tablets, we have two notebooks, and a netbook that's a bestseller at Musician's Friend and Guitar Center right now. And then next month, Best Buy is going in with a kiosk, and our software is going to go in there. You're able to plug it in, you know, and install it on any machine. So the technology has been able to actually catch up with what we're doing, and it's been a fun process. In time, you know, we have, you know, three different DAWs on there. We have DJ software and a tracker. And what's cool about what we do is, like, everything's touchscreen on the tablet, but whatever you're doing on it, whether you're DJing, making a track, talking, or podcasting, you could actually be broadcasting on your own internet radio station, which is really cool. So we offer, it's an all-in-one solution. Like, you don't have to install anything else. Like, that's the whole point we wanted to do it. You install it once, and you have everything included, so you don't have to install.
So you buy the hardware that has the software installed.
What about the plugins?
Huh?
What about plugins that you would like to add?
Yeah, you could do that, but we offer 330 plugins on our platform.
Oh. Wow.
So, yeah, there's enough right there just to go in there and be able to look for a year on whatever you want to do.
And it's $200?
The funny part is we have a USB stick version that's only $150. So you get all that, you know, included in that. You can install that on your old PC desktop or whatever you have. We don't have a version for Mac guys yet because, you know, we're working on that and it's not really needed for what we're trying to do. But
you have all this plugin stuff here with you on the tablets?
We have all these.
I'd like to check it out.
Yeah, for sure. That's kind of what we do. It's an Linux audio OS designed from the ground up for mobile devices. You know, it's all in one solution.
But the thing that caught my eye is I went to his booth and he had Pro Tools 9 running on a tablet.
Look at that.
So Pro Tools
9 running
on Linux.
You look at those products. That looks like something I need to own, doesn't it?
I was looking at the same thing when I got into the room tonight. I was thinking, I like the weight of this versus the entire.
Right. And it's, the cool part about it is, we got Pro Tools running on. In order to do that, we had to do a combo with Windows. So we dual boot it with our OS too, but you can load anything you want on it. It's a 250 gigabyte hard drive. It's more than most laptops. You got 2 gigs of RAM and a 1.3 gigahertz Intel COV chip. So, like, you can really, you know, go lights out with it. There's a VST host with it, so you can still load in all your old DLL files.
Right.
And
did you say it was 7,200 RPM hard drive?
Yeah, that's a 7,200 RPM hard drive.
Oh, so, wow.
It's, you know, like, it runs lights out, you know.
No
you can
kid.
Do everything in it. And also, like, if you have your stem tracks or whatever, you just hand it to somebody that's going to listen to your song and be like, "Yeah, take a listen to my new song," and they're going to be like, "What the heck?"
Because you're looking into the mix, actually. That's
wicked. Yeah, yeah. It's my destiny.
So you get four of them together. It's
in fact, I'm noticing you don't have your iPad anymore.
I have my iPad, but
where?
It's right here. That's where my notes on.
Okay.
Well, yeah. The cool part about it is we have two USB ports, so you can connect all your USB interface and the USB MIDI keyboard and have your little mobile setup on the airplane, whatever you want. It's more
by
about
the way,
portability.
I just thought about something else that I saw that I wanted to talk about very quickly, if I may.
Yeah.
The Alesis port for the iPad.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, that thing, basically you connect the iPad, and it's a different product. It's a different
product. Totally, it's a docking station.
Yeah, it's a docking station.
Yeah, I saw that too. I was real intrigued by that because we already have it as...
Yeah.
Yeah.
But this is very cool because, you know, Pro Tools, it's a different story than, you know, the iPad apps, and this is definitely...
iPads
are
never
going
to be able to...
But you know what I find interesting? More than just even like, hey, look, I can control something on a small tablet that's... I like the idea of... that touch screens offer a unique experience.
Yeah, you're right.
So it's like, I can use Pro Tools, but I can use a keyboard. What I want to know is what can I do on a tablet that's unique because of the multi-touch, the beyond XY status, and all of a sudden some really cool ways of being able to do filtering. And
plug-in control is huge with a tablet, you know, and being able to... do plug-in control, twist the knobs. With your finger, you're able to do a lot of weird stuff that you wouldn't be able to do with a mouse.
Because one thing I saw at Spectrasonics, which at first I went, oh my god, was it the OMG?
The OMG-1.
OMG-1.
Yeah.
He had this... First I was sitting there going, because it was gorgeous wood, like zebra wood or flaming maple. It was just gorgeous stuff. And he's touching all these pads, and I guess he's got two iPads built into it.
Two iPads, two iPhones, iPods, the little fatty Omnisphere running all at the same time.
I
saw that.
I just thought, I want that keyboard, and I don't know
what
it is.
And someone will win it, because it's going to be up for the contest with the Bob
Make
Foundation.
More of them. But it was the first time I saw an iPad integrated, two iPads.
Yeah, right.
Integrated.
Yeah, that
into
was
it.
Like a crazy project that Eric was running on the side. When he showed that to us, I was like, what?
But you know, with their company and the tablets, it just shows you what he did just as a one-off.
Yeah.
Right.
Now all of a sudden you put tablets
actually,
in there.
It's a cool thing, if I can say. Just they're going to do this contest together with the Bob Moog Foundation to help finance the creation of the Museum of Bob Moog. So,
that's cool.
You know,
that's cool.
All of us here,
we'll check
you know,
it
we play synths, knows how important.
I got $25 up towards it.
Well, but I don't know the details because the details are not announced yet.
Right. Yeah.
But someone is going to win that machine, the OMG-1.
Right. We'll check it out when it gets here. But one thing I will say about working on this tablet is, you know, I have an iPad. There's some great stuff to do with it, like Curtis and things like that. But you know, sometimes
Curtis is cool, by the way.
Yeah. Sometimes you just need to get the horsepower. You just need to go to a mature OS and run the real software. And that, especially like, you know,
you put
SoundForge on that and you want to do some mastering on the way home from, you know.
But even Pro Tools 9 now that you can combine it with any interface, it's that and an interface, you have a studio.
Well,
it just shows where tablet technology is going.
It's amazing. I think the future is going to look a lot like that. And thanks for coming, Tony.
Thank you for having
me.
I appreciate it.
But it's really cool, and I just want to encourage everybody to go check out what's your website?
Indamix.com, IndaMixx.com.
All right, so check out Indamix.com. It's worth your while. There's a ton of options. There's a lot of product up there, and the USB stick is really cool, especially if you look at all the software you get. It's really great. And you know what? If you have that old computer that you don't know what to do with, you know, and you just – or even a netbook that you have, you know, because it's very lightweight, man, buy the USB version of that, and you will have a new machine, and you will be cool like Scott Gershon. So Thomas, tell us a little bit about what you're working on, and pick one.
The hottest thing is this Kemper profiling amplifier.
Yeah.
It's invented by Christoph Kemper, the guy who invented the virus synthesizer, the company Axis. It's now all under the Kemper roof, and he decided, because it's a completely different product, to call it...
Is the guy with the glasses?
The Kemper. No, no.
Not the other guy with the hair...
Yeah, yeah.
I know them both.
Yeah.
Just say hi to him.
Okay, I will. And Yeah, what he did, he's not a guitar player himself, but he was a big fan of guitar sound. And he thought when he saw, as he was playing as a keyboarder in various bands, that the guitar players always were struggling with the cables between their pedals and 9-volt batteries and power supplies and hum and amplifiers and heavy stuff and a lot of stuff. And then the microphone wasn't right and the sound today wasn't right, and drums and the guitar amp don't go together dynamically anyways if you're playing in small clubs, so it's all been a big mess. And he thought there must be a solution to this. And he looked at all the things which were out there, which are out there now, the modeling, and so he thought there must be something else. And he came up with this profiling idea. The philosophy is that every guitar player should spend time with his equipment, find his sound with his tube amplifier, and this device is then capable of copying this sound of that tube amp into the digital box, which sounds unbelievable, but yeah, we've been showing that at the show 10 times a day with a Mesa Boogie Road King head, where we use the various channels, because this thing can do builds up the various architectures of tube amps, that it really works. And yeah, I was still amazed that it worked all the time. I know this technology for, I don't know, the last 5 years. I was involved a little bit as a little bit of a consultant from the guitar side of things, and yeah, it has blown away everybody so far. And I was just wondering, was that the device you couldn't find the knob to change the rigs?
I don't know. I was going,
this greenish thing, this lunchbox thing next to the Presonus booth, maybe.
Okay.
Oh my God.
By the way, I saw this. No, you know what? I saw this part of the conversation coming, and I just said, "Oh, let it happen." See what happens?
No, because then we will think about the interface again. Of course, no. There's the things are called rigs. The profiles are called rigs, and there's just a button for this. But that's unique. That's new. A rig is not a patch, of course. So
maybe, right.
Maybe you haven't found that.
See, that's what we do here at the Audio Nowcast. We make things better.
Yeah.
But I love the video. I saw the video and I was impressed.
Oh, yeah, I like the sound of it, too. It was pretty awesome. And you know what? It's reasonably priced, too.
Yeah, and it works like you plug the guitar into the profiling amp, and there's a second output which runs into the input of the guitar amp. Then you stick a microphone in front of the speaker cabinet and run it back into the mic input of the profiler. And then you just hit profiling, and it sends some...
So you can model your own amp.
Yeah.
Basically, yes.
Can you model also other acoustic sources? Any other kind of source?
This is optimized for tube amps, for guitar sounds. So the
mind is already thinking, and yours probably too.
Well, no, absolutely. Yeah.
The tones and the whole process is optimized for the behavior of a guitar amp. So the algorithms are looking for the things and the behavior, so that you run into some distortion and you run into some saturation.
So it allows you to model your own amp.
Exactly.
Or amps.
Yeah, exactly.
So you get all your friends together, get all the amps together.
Or other people's amps.
Right.
And the thing that's cool is it allows you to model that particular app. So it's not like a Fender
is there an online community that can trade?
Yeah, it's not there yet. We've been showing it for the first time. It will ship in May, and by then there will be the online community. A profile is just 3 kilobytes.
Yeah, of course.
Big.
Yeah.
And that will be possible, and then something else is, because a lot of people have been asking for it, is that just a snapshot? So if I have the amp settings that I'm playing at my amp, no, you dial in the sound you like, do the profile, and afterwards you can, on the digital machine, do any edits you would do to the amp and much more. So gain, bass, middle, treble, presence.
Would it allow you to do profiles of pedals?
If it's distortion pedals, Christoph said yes. Everything else, not modulation modules and stuff
that. I bet it's going to be something that you're just going to have to wait till they get out there into the real world and see what people do with it, because you know it's.
But I can see the benefit for many guitar players. Yeah. They have so much stuff and they want to bring it outside.
It is absolutely
without bringing it actually.
So,
and especially for guys who go to a studio and there's a huge collection of vintage amps, and they have a hard time time to recreate these sounds with their stack they are able to take with them on the road.
I think that's what's great with modeling. I mean, the modeling technology in general is allowing that, you know, whether it's the 11, the Axe FX, you know, those kinds of things. Because, you know, do you want a Fender? Do you want a Boogie? Do you want
Yes, I mean
no, the real thing. Actually, being a purist, I would always want the real thing.
Yeah. Do you want those artifacts to get in your way?
Yeah.
Well,
go ahead. I was just saying one last thing is that we were talking about the real thing, but not all the amps, even of the same brand, are the same.
Right.
Some just you get these sweet sound that one amp.
Yeah.
That's a sweet.
Exactly.
And the chances of you buying that one, I mean, you could spend $20,000 and barely make a scratch.
True.
But come closer, you know.
Right. Well, hey, listen, we're going to wrap up. And before we go, there's two things I got to say. Number one, 3 p.m. on Sunday. That is the golden hour if you want to start buying microphones, okay? Mm-hmm. So you just go down there, make the deal. Don't make your deal before 3 p.m. because they're going to say, got to come back at 3. So if you're going to buy anything at NAMM, right, if you're out there listening, you get a chance to go to NAMM.
But how
right?
do you know how it sounds? I mean, does it even work?
You know what? $40.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's worth it.
It's a mystery box.
But here's the thing. Here's my philosophy on the Chinese microphones. Yeah. If they're gonna take it to NAMM, they're gonna want to take their best stock that they have.
Yeah, but
they're
the problem is what they give you after 3 p.m. is the switching.
There's no switch. It's all there. It's the same thing you've been looking at, and it works. And microphones.
They give you
not
the
buy
the
ribbon microphones.
They don't give you the ribbon.
But you know what? It's not even just the microphones. If you're going to buy anything at NAMM, you got to go to the right vendors too. Don't go up to Korg and see if they're going to sell you a key oscillator.
Right.
You know, I've seen people do that in the booths. They go up there and they are you guys selling that? And the guy's doing a demo on it, right?
Yeah,
no.
You go to the
distributors, you know, World Music and all these other guys. You go to Hall E is like
a Hall E's great.
Hall E would be worth just going to that. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just so much fun. The second thing I want to tell people is, you know, with all the technology and everything that's out there, something that really kind of struck a chord, what Patrick Leonard said on the last podcast that we were at, is, you know, learn to play, because it was really amazing when you're walking by some of these booths and you hear some of these guys demo, and there's some great players out there. And nothing sounds better than a real instrument, whether it's a keyboard, whether it's a bass, whether it's drums, and you hear a guy that knows how to play that instrument. And you can't buy that in a box. You can't buy that in a plugin.
Yep.
You can't model it. You can't profile it. You got to learn how to play. And it inspired me to want to go and you know, learn music more and just be a better person at the music that I make, and you will go farther doing that than anything else. So on that note, we're going to wrap up our first roundtable discussion. And guys, just remember, this is podcast
99.5.
Podcast, not 100. So I just want to thank Tony once again for coming.
Thank you very
and
much.
Thomas, thank you very much for joining
You're
us.
Very welcome. Thank
and,
you.
And if you want to, Thomas is part of a podcast over in Germany called Musa Talk. And if you want to give a shout out in German, feel free to shout out to the guys.
Ja, viele Grüße an den Audio Nowcast von dem Team von Musotalk.tv und nun Eric, der Macher des Musotalk ist. Mein Name ist Tom Wendt.
Nice!
He just said, our podcast is way better than
the other.
You know what's amazing? I got Google Analytics on our website, and we actually get more people from Germany going to our website than we do from the US.
Oh, wait. Wow. I got a guy from Italy saying that it's very popular in Italy as well.
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah. But those Germans, man, they know a good thing. So if you want to reach us, you can reach us at Facebook at facebook.com/audionowcast, or you can send us an email at audio@nowcastnetwork.com. That's audio@nowcastnetwork.com. From myself and all the guys, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening. Be sure to check out our regular podcast at audionowcast.com. If you have any comments or questions, please email us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com or visit our Facebook page.